Lever standing, pulling the scythe from his chest. "He can't be stopped," she said to herself. "Just like Serpine, he can't be stopped." She ran the last few steps to the door, and just as she reached it, the breath went out of her. She stopped, frowning, willing her body to move, but it wouldn't listen. She looked down at the tip of the scythe that protruded through her chest. She turned, cursing herself, saw the cleaver walking up the steps toward her. That was some throw. She almost laughed. Her right arm was numb, and her sword fell from her grip. He stepped up beside her and took hold of the scythe. He circled, moving her around, looking at her like he was observing her pain, remembering what it was like. A twist of his hands, and she was forced to her knees. She gasped when he removed the weapon, saw her own blood, deep red, mixed with the black blood already on the blade. Her body was shutting down. She wasn't going to be able to defend herself. He raised the scythe. Tanith looked up, ready to die, then realized that when he had circled her, he had passed through the doorway and was now standing out in the corridor. She lunged, slamming the door in his visored face. She pressed her hand against it and whispered, "Withstand!" The sheen spread over the door just as the cleaver began to pound on it from the other side. She had failed. She had slowed him down, but she hadn't stopped him. And now Serpine had his attack dog back. Tanith tried standing, but her body couldn't take any more. She slumped to the ground. The prisoners watched from their cages with delighted eyes, and as her blood seeped through her tunic, they started whispering. Chapter 29. Deep in Dublin. Death. The white cleaver stood there, silent as a ghost, deadly as a plague.
"Valkyrie," Tanith said. "Get behind me."
Stephanie backed up until she was beside Skulduggery.
"I'll hold him off," Tanith said. "You stop Serpine."
She drew her sword. The cleaver drew his scythe. Stephanie felt Skulduggery touch her arm and they moved off.
"You're going to have to go after the scepter," Skulduggery whispered as they jogged through the corridor. "You can get close to it. I can't." "It's not much of a plan, but sometimes simplicity is the way to go."
The repository was just ahead. They slowed, and Skulduggery gripped both her arms and turned to her.
"But you listen to me. If it goes wrong, if we lose the element of surprise, I want you to get out of here. No matter what happens to me, I want you to run, do you understand?"
Stephanie swallowed.
"Yes."
He hesitated.
"Serpine used my wife and child as a weapon against me. In order to do so, he had to kill them. He took my family's death and he made it about me. Valkyrie, when you die, it will be your death and yours alone. Let it come to you on your own terms."
She nodded.
"Valkyrie Kane," he said. "It has been an absolute pleasure knowing you."
She looked back at him.
"You too."
If he'd had lips, she knew he'd be smiling. They sneaked up to the doors. They were already open, and Stephanie could see Serpine, the scepter in his hand, and his back to them, taking slow, deliberate steps towards the Book of Names. Sagacious Tome was watching, but he too had his back to the doors.
"I can't see Mr. Bliss,"
Stephanie whispered, and Skulduggery shook his head. Neither could he. Stephanie hesitated, then passed into the repository and crept to her left. She reached a heavy table laden with artifacts and peered around. Serpine had stopped walking, and for a moment she thought he knew she was there. But as she watched, he turned and walked back, shaking his head.
"It's still too strong," he said.
"It's as weak as it's going to get,"
Sagacious Tome said.
"I thought with Meritorius and Morwenna dead, the barrier wouldn't pose a problem. But I can't withdraw my contribution to the spell, not without the others joining me in the ceremony."
Serpine rejoined Tome, arching an eyebrow.
"Then perhaps we shouldn't have killed them."
"I didn't kill them,"
Tome said defensively.
"You did."
Stephanie stayed low as she crept from behind the table. Serpine laughed.
I may have been the one to turn them to dust, but you set them up, Sagacious. You drew them in. You betrayed them.
Tome spun on Serpine, jabbing at the space between them with his finger.
No, I didn't. It was their weakness that led to their downfall, their own shortcomings. They had all this power, and they were satisfied to just sit there and let it all go to waste.
Until recently, I had never thought of you as ambitious.
No one had. Sagacious Tome, they said, he's a non-entity. He's not the strongest, he's not the wisest. He's nothing. That's what they said. I know it. For years, people have been underestimating me. It's time people recognized my power.
Stephanie got to her hands and knees and started crawling. She was in shadow, and they weren't looking her way, but if either turned, there was a chance they would see her. Stephanie wasn't in the mood to take any chances.
I'm going to make them pay, Tome was saying. Everyone who ever questioned me. The streets will run red with their blood.
How dramatic,
Serpine said, and raised his hand. Stephanie saw the book lift off its pedestal and hover there for a moment. Then he grunted impatiently and let it drop again.
I told you that's not going to work, Tome said. It's how close you are to getting it. It doesn't have to be physically close. It isn't a physical barrier. It's a mental barrier.
Stephanie held her breath. She was behind the pillar next to them. Serpine's voice was so close he could have been speaking right into her ear.
So with you, the final elder remaining. The barrier isn't sufficiently weakened to let me through, is that right? Yes, but that's not my fault. I did what I could. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And now there's one more thing you can do to help solve this little problem. What are you talking about?
Tome asked, and then his tone changed suddenly. Became afraid.
What are you doing? Point that thing somewhere else, Serpine. I'm warning you. Point that...
There was a black flash, and silence. After a moment, she heard Serpine's footsteps move off again, and Stephanie took a peek. He was walking slowly, concentrating on the book, his back to her. This was the only chance she was going to get. She crept out from behind the pillar, ignoring the fresh pile of dust at her feet. There was no way she could close the distance without giving herself away. He'd hear her, sense her, whatever, but he was holding the scepter in his hand so loosely. Stephanie narrowed her eyes and stepped forward. He had heard her and was turning, but she didn't care. The scepter was coming up, the black crystal starting to glow. She flexed her fingers and splayed her hand, snapping open her palm and pushing at the air, and the space around her hand rippled, and the scepter flew from Serpine's grasp, flew away from them both, and hit the far wall. Serpine hissed in anger and turned. They heard the scepter start to sing as Skullduggery sprinted in. He dived into the air, and the space around him shimmered as he shot forward. He covered the distance in the blink of an eye. He crashed into Serpine, taking him off his feet. They hit the pedestal, and it toppled, the book falling as they sprawled onto the ground. Skullduggery was the first to stand, and he hauled Serpine up, shoved him against a pillar, and fired off a punch that jerked his head back. Serpine lunged, but Skullduggery snagged his wrist and stepped in and then under the arm. He turned and wrenched, and Serpine yelled in pain as a loud crack echoed through the chamber. Serpine tried gathering purple vapor in his hand, but Skullduggery batted the hand away, chopped into the side of his neck. Serpine gagged and dropped back, and Skullduggery kicked his legs out from under him.
You never could fight worth a damn, Skullduggery said, standing over him. But then you didn't need to, did you? Not when you had lackeys to do the fighting for you. Where are your lackeys now, Nefarian? I don't need them, Serpine muttered. I don't need anyone. I'll crush you myself. Grind your bones to dust.
Skullduggery tilted his head.
Unless you've got an army tucked away in that fancy coat of yours, I sincerely doubt it.
Serpine scrambled up and rushed at him, but Skullduggery drove in a kick and brought his closed fist down onto his shoulder, and Serpine fell to his knees. Stephanie had to get to the scepter before Serpine recovered. She was pushing herself off the ground when she realized that the Book of Names was lying open right beside her. She glanced at the pages and the columns of names started to rearrange themselves before her eyes. She saw her own name written there, but she looked up when she heard Skullduggery grunt. Serpine was on his knees, but his lips were moving, and the wall behind Skullduggery came alive with hands that reached out and grabbed him. Skullduggery was pulled back, and Serpine stood. There were a series of dull cracks and pops as Serpine's broken bones mended and realigned.
"Where are your oh-so-clever taunts now, detective?"
Skullduggery struggled against the grip of a dozen hands.
"You've got big ears,"
he managed to say before he was pulled even further back into the wall, and then he was gone. Serpine looked over, saw Stephanie, saw how close she was to the scepter. He snapped out his hand, and a thin purple tendril whipped towards the scepter. He pulled his arm back, and the scepter flew off the ground, but Stephanie lunged and managed to grab it. She was jerked off her feet, but her grip was strong and the tendril broke, becoming vapor, and she hit the floor. She heard a crash and looked around as a table hurtled straight at her. She tried to dive out of the way, but she wasn't quick enough. It hit her, and she screamed, dropped the scepter, and clutched at her broken leg. She shut her eyes against the tears of pain, and when she opened them again, Mr. Bliss was walking into the room.
"Where have you been?"
Serpine snapped.
"I was delayed,"
Mr. Bliss answered.
"But you seem to have done fine without me."
Serpine narrowed his eyes.
"Indeed. Still, there's one more adversary to deal with."
Mr. Bliss looked at Stephanie.
"You're going to kill her."
"Me? No, you are."
"I'm sorry."
"If you want to reap the rewards of this night, you have to get your hands a little bloody."
"You want me to kill an unarmed child?"
Mr. Bliss asked doubtfully.
"Look on it as a test of your commitment to our lords and masters. You don't have a problem with that, do you?"
Mr. Bliss looked at him coolly.
"Do you have a weapon for me? Or do you just want me to beat her to death with a large stick?"
Serpine took a dagger from his coat and lobbed it over to him. Mr. Bliss snatched it out of the air and held it, testing its weight. Stephanie felt her throat go dry. Mr. Bliss looked at her, but didn't say anything. He just sighed and hurled the dagger, and Stephanie made a face and turned her head and heard Serpine laugh. She looked back. The dagger hadn't touched her. It hadn't even come close. It was in Serpine's hand. He had caught it before it had sliced into his glittering left eye.
"I thought as much," Serpine said.
Mr. Bliss flung himself at Serpine, but Serpine ripped his glove off and raised his red right hand, and Mr. Bliss collapsed. Serpine listened to him scream for a few moments before dropping his hand, and Mr. Bliss gasped.
"No doubt you want to kill me," Serpine said as he approached him. "No doubt you want to rip me limb from limb, and with your legendary strength I know you could do it, and not even exert yourself. But answer me this, Mr. Bliss, what good is legendary strength when you can't get close enough to use it?"
Mr. Bliss tried to stand, but his knees gave out and he hit the ground again.
"I'm curious," Serpine continued. "Why the pretense? Why go to all this trouble? Why put yourself in this position? Why didn't you just stick with the detective?"
Mr. Bliss managed to shake his head.
"We mightn't have been able to stop you," he said. "I know you, Serpine. You always have plans to fall back on. You are too dangerous, too unpredictable. I needed you to get the scepter."
Serpine smiled.
"And why was that?"
Mr. Bliss echoed that smile with one of his own, albeit a drained and sickly version.
"Because once you had the scepter, I could predict your actions."
"So you predicted my invulnerability?"
Serpine laughed.
"Oh, well done."
"No one's invulnerable,"
Mr. Bliss whispered.
"Yes, well," Serpine said with a shrug, "you're certainly not."
Stephanie watched in horror as Serpine again pointed his right hand, and Mr. Bliss contorted in agony. His screams reached new heights, and just when it seemed like he could take no more, Serpine picked him up, and with his hands pressed against him, gathered the purple vapor in his fists. Mr. Bliss was blasted backwards through the air into a group of shelves at the far side of the room. He didn't get up. Serpine turned back to Stephanie.
"Sorry for the interruption,"
he said as he picked her up. His hands gripped the lapels of her coat, and he lifted her off her feet, looking up at her as he spoke. Her right leg dangled uselessly, and that pain was all she felt.
"How did you do it? How did you get so close without the scepter alerting me?
Some magic I don't know about.
Stephanie didn't answer.
Miss Kane, I know you're trying to hide it, but I can see the fear in your eyes. You don't want to die today, do you? Of course you don't. You have your whole life ahead of you. If only you'd kept out of all this, if only you'd left the death of your uncle alone, you wouldn't be here right now. Your uncle was a very stubborn man. If he had just given me the key when I asked, you wouldn't be in this predicament. He delayed my plans, you see, caused a lot of unnecessary stress and bother. A lot of people are dead now because of him.
Stephanie's face twisted.
Don't you dare blame my uncle for the people you've killed.
I didn't want this. I didn't want conflict. I just wanted to eliminate the elders and take the book. Do you see how simple that would have been? Instead, I had to wade through a river of corpses. Those deaths are on your uncle's head.
Stephanie's hatred became a cold thing in her center.
But you don't have to join them, Miss Kane. You can survive this. You can live. I see something in you. I think you'd like the new world that's coming.
I wouldn't bet on it,
Stephanie said quietly. Serpine smiled patiently and leaned his face in close to her.
You can survive if you tell me how you got so close without the scepter alerting me.
With no weapons left, Stephanie spat on him. He sighed and threw her against a pillar. She smacked into it and her body twisted and she dropped onto her back. Her eyes wouldn't focus. The pain was far away. She heard his voice like there was a wall separating them.
No matter. I'm about to make slaves of the entire population of this planet, and then there will be no more secrets. There will be no magic hidden from me, and when the Faceless Ones return, this world will be remade as a place of splendid darkness.
He passed her, a vague shape in the corner of her eye. She had to get up. She had to snap out of this. The pain from a broken leg, she had to let it in. It was nothing more than a sensation now. She had to allow it to flood her. She focused on her leg. It was throbbing, the pain spiking, and with each new height it reached, her mind sharpened a little more. Then the pain came at her, cascaded over her with its full force, and she had to bite her lip to stop from crying out. She looked up. Serpine was approaching the book. Stephanie gripped the edge of a tabletop and pulled herself up onto her good leg. She grabbed the first thing she saw, a glass vial filled with green liquid, and threw it. It hit Serpine in the back and shattered, and the liquid turned to vapor and dissipated into the air. He spun round, angry.
You, my dear, have proven yourself to be far too troublesome for your own good.
He raised his red hand, and from somewhere behind her, she heard the scepter singing again. And then Skullduggery dropped through the ceiling, landing in a heap next to Serpine. The detective looked around.
Ah, he said. I'm back.
You are,
Serpine said, and Skullduggery looked up and saw him. Serpine lashed a kick into Skullduggery's side, and Skullduggery grunted. He tried to get up, but Serpine batted his hands away and grabbed his skull. He drove his knee into the side of Skullduggery's head, and Skullduggery sprawled onto his back. Serpine looked over to Stephanie, and then to the ground behind her, and she turned, saw the scepter. She lunged for it, but a purple tendril wrapped itself around her waist, and she was yanked back onto her broken leg. She cried out as the pain shot through her. Serpine whipped the tendril to the scepter, yanked it into his left hand and whirled, the crystal flashing with a black light that streaked towards Skullduggery. The detective dived as a whole section of the wall behind him turned to dust. Skullduggery drew his gun and fired, hitting Serpine in the chest.
Still with that little toy of yours,
Serpine said, amused and unharmed.
How quaint.
Skullduggery circled him. Serpine held the scepter down by his side.
You'll be stopped, Skullduggery said. You've always been stopped. Oh, my old foe, but this is different.
Those days are gone. Who is there to rise up against me? Who is left? Remember when you were a man, a real man, I mean, not this mockery I see before me. Do you remember what it was like? You had an army on your side. You had people willing to fight and die for your cause. We wanted to bring the faceless ones back, to worship them as the gods that they are. You wanted to keep them out, so that this infestation of humanity, the celebration of the mundane, might be allowed to live and thrive. Well, they've lived, and they've thrived, and now their time is up.
Skullduggery's finger tightened on the trigger. Black blood sprayed from Serpine's chest, and the wound instantly healed. Serpine laughed.
You have caused me so much trouble over the years, detective. It's almost a shame that I have to end it.
Skullduggery cocked his head.
You're surrendering.
I'm going to miss this, Serpine said. If it makes it any easier, you can think of your imminent demise as a good thing. I don't think you'll much like the world once my lords and masters remake it. So, how are you going to kill me?
Skullduggery asked, dropping his gun and holding his arms out.
With your toy? Or one of these new tricks you've learned?
Serpine smiled.
I have been expanding my repertoire. So good of you to notice.
And I see you've been playing around with necromancy again.
Indeed. My very own pet cleaver. Every home should have one.
He's a tricky fellow to put down, Skullduggery said. I tried everything I know. He just kept getting back up.
Serpine laughed.
There's an old necromancer saying, you can't kill what's already dead.
Skullduggery cocked his head. He's a zombie.
Oh, no. I wouldn't associate myself with those wretched things. He can repair, replenish, heal. A difficult process to master. But I am nothing if not accomplished.
Of course, Skullduggery said, something new in his voice. The medical equipment in the warehouse. The cleaver was a test run to see if the process worked.
Then you did it to yourself.
Ah, the great detective finally figures something out.
Bells and whistles aside, Nefarian. He's nothing but a zombie. And so are you.
Serpine shook his head.
Your last words are pathetic insults. I was hoping for more. Something profound, perhaps. Maybe a poem.
He raised the scepter.
It will be a slightly less strange world without you. I just want you to know that.
Stephanie screamed his name as Skullduggery dived. Serpine laughed, and the scepter sent out its bolt of black lightning, but Skullduggery had seized the Book of Names and held it as a shield. The black lightning hit the book, and it disappeared in a cloud of dust.
No!
Serpine screamed.
No!
Stephanie stared as the book that the elders couldn't destroy sifted through Skullduggery's fingers. He charged through the cloud, slamming it into Serpine. The scepter fell and rolled away. Serpine's hands closed around Skullduggery's neck, forcing his head back.
You ruined it, he hissed. You ruined it all, you pathetic creature.
Skullduggery slammed a fist into Serpine's face and batted the hands away. He stepped in with a jab that rocked the sorcerer's head. Serpine blasted Skullduggery with purple vapor, and Skullduggery was flung off his feet. He landed on his side and rolled, coming up to his knees as Serpine whipped a tendril out for the scepter. It sped towards him, but Skullduggery pushed outwards at the air, breaking the tendril and knocking the scepter off course. Skullduggery gathered flame in his fist and threw it at Serpine, who barely managed to deflect it. It exploded on the wall behind him, and Serpine hissed again, stumbling away before being launched backwards as the air rippled around him. He hit the wall and stayed there, high off the ground, held up by Skullduggery's outstretched hand from across the room.
I'll destroy you, he snarled, his emerald eyes blazing with hatred. I destroyed you once, I will do it again.
He struggled to raise his right arm. Skullduggery pressed against him harder, drawing on his last reserves. But Serpine refused to be beaten. The fingers of his red hand pointed at Skullduggery.
Die,
Serpine whispered. Skullduggery inclined his head a little to the right and didn't fall. Serpine's face contorted with rage.
Die!
He screamed.
Skullduggery remained standing.
Looks like there's something that hand of yours can't kill after all.
A figure moved in the doorway. Serpine's laugh was one of spittle and gritted teeth as the white cleaver appeared.
So, you have an immunity to my power. No matter, that scythe of his will shear through your bones. You'll be nothing but rubble when he's through with you. Cleaver, attack!
But the cleaver stayed where he was, and Serpine's confidence started to ebb.
What are you doing? Kill him!
The white cleaver took another moment, and then walked away. Serpine screamed his rage.
You've lost, Nefarian, Skullduggery said. Even your henchman is abandoning you. Even he recognizes your defeat. I'm placing you under arrest for murder, attempted murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and, I don't know, possibly littering. Serpine spat.
You will never beat me. I will always find a way to make you suffer.
And then his green eyes flickered towards Stephanie, still lying on the ground.
Don't,
Skullduggery said. But Serpine was already moving his hand across his body.
Serpine, don't.
Stephanie cried out as a pain more intense than anything she had ever felt scourged her body. Serpine twisted his fingers, and the pain intensified, turning her cry into a scream, turning the scream to silent agony. She curled up, feeling something cold spread from her belly, a welcome numbness that cancelled the pain, that moved into her arms and legs, that wrapped itself around her heart and seeped into her mind. And now there was nothing. Now there were just vague images of Serpine and Skullduggery. A distant voice, Skullduggery calling out to her, but that too was fading. No pain now, no sound. Her eyelids fluttered. Serpine with that grin, Skullduggery holding his free hand out, and something moving through the air, everything moving so slowly. The scepter. It was the scepter. And then it was in Skullduggery's gloved hand, and his fingers were tightening around it. He was raising his arm and pointing the scepter at Serpine, and the little crystal started to glow. It glowed dark, a pretty little darkness, and then the air cracked. The coldness had overtaken her now. The numbness was everywhere, and the last bits that made her who she was were gradually drifting away. She didn't care. She didn't mind at all. Let them go. She didn't have a care in the world. Serpine's grinning face, his eyes, his smile, all those teeth, his skin creased in savage pleasure. And now that skin was changing, and it was drying, and it was cracking, and the smile was fading, and the emerald green eyes were losing their gleam, clouding over, and Serpine turned to dust that fell to the floor. And there was a ringing in her ears, and her fingertips were tingling, and warmth was rushing back to her, and her heart was beating again, and her lungs sucked in air. And Stephanie gasped. Skullduggery ran over and kneeled beside her.
Are you all right?
He asked. But all she could do was shiver. Her leg twisted, and she hissed in pain. But it was a bearable pain. It was a good pain.
Come on,
Skullduggery said, taking her arm gently. Let's get you out of here. She put her weight on him, and he half carried her, half lifted her out of the chamber and into the corridor. They passed the jail as the door opened, and Tanith toppled out. She hit the ground and groaned. Stephanie looked down at her friend, at all that blood.
Tanith?
Tanith raised her head.
Oh, good,
she muttered.
You're alive.
Skullduggery reached for her, pulled her carefully to her feet, and with an arm around each, he guided them both to the foyer. They climbed the stairs slowly and moved through the waxworks. The rain had stopped, and the ground was wet as they emerged into the night. China Sorrows was standing beside her car, waiting for them. When they were close enough so Stephanie could see the delicate earrings China was wearing, she spoke.
You've all seen better days.
Could have used your help,
Skullduggery said as they came to a stop. China shrugged her slender shoulders.
I knew you could do it without me. I had faith. Serpine?
Dust, Skullduggery said. Too many plans, too many schemes.
sooner or later they'd cancel each other out. That was always his trouble.
How did you manage it?
He wanted immortality. So he chose death on his own terms. A living death.
China smiled.
Uh-huh. And because the scepter can only be wielded when its previous owner is dead, or in this case, when its owner is the living dead.
I took it and used it on him.
He held up the scepter.
Something happened, though. There's no power in it anymore.
China took it from him, turning it over in her hands.
It was fueled by his hate. Obviously, using it against him made it feed on itself. Congratulations, Skullduggery. You've managed to break the ultimate weapon. It's nothing but an ornament now.
An ornament I'd like back, he said, holding out his hand. She smiled, turning her head slightly to look at him out of the corner of her eye.
I'll buy it from you, she said.
Why would you want it?
He asked.
It's worthless.
Sentimental reasons. Besides, you know what an avid collector I am.
He sighed.
Fine, take it.
There it was, that smile again.
Thank you. Oh, and the book?
Destroyed.
How very like you to destroy the indestructible. You have quite an appetite for destruction, don't you?
China, these bones are weary.
Then I shall leave you. Bliss is still in there,
Stephanie said.
I think he was working against Serpine the whole time. I don't know if he's alive, though. That brother of mine is quite resilient. I've tried to kill him 3 times already, and he just won't stay down.
China got into her car, looked at them through the open window.
Oh, by the way, all 3 of you, congratulations on saving the world.
She gave them a beautiful smile, and they watched her drive off. They stood there for a while. The sky was beginning to brighten, the first rays of the morning sun seeping into the black.
You know, Tanith said weakly, I still have a gigantic hole in my back.
Sorry,
Skullduggery said, and helped them both towards the Bentley.
Chapter 30. An End. A Beginning. Somewhere in Haggard, a dog was barking. Somewhere, a driver beeped his horn, and somewhere else people were laughing. It was a Friday night, and music drifted to Stephanie's open window from the bars and pubs on Main Street, snatches of songs piggybacking on the warm breeze. Stephanie sat in her swivel chair, her foot resting on the bed. Skullduggery had taken her to a friend of his, a cantankerous old man who had mended her broken leg within an hour. It was still stiff, and she couldn't walk on it, but the bruising had gone down, and in another few days it would be like it had never been broken at all. She didn't mind the recuperation period she had been advised to take. After the week she'd just had, a week in which she'd seen wonder and magic and death and destruction, she could do with a little holiday. Skullduggery Pleasant sat on the windowsill and told her what was happening in the world outside her bedroom. The white cleaver had vanished, and they still didn't know why or even how he had ignored his master's final command. Skullduggery had a suspicion that he was under orders from somebody else, but just who this mystery master was, he didn't yet know. Serpine's allies had resurfaced and struck, and then vanished again when the news of the sorcerer's demise had reached them. Serpine's grand scheme may have failed, but because of it, the cleaver's numbers had been decimated, and their duties now stretched them thin.
How's Tanith?
Stephanie asked.
Will she be okay?
She's lucky to be alive. The injury she took was severe, but she's strong. She'll pull through. I'll take you to see her when you're rested.
And Ghastly? Any change?
I'm afraid not. They're keeping him safe, but we don't know how long he'll stay like that. Fortunately for him, the time will pass in the blink of an eye. The rest of us will have to wait. On the bright side, the sanctuary has a new and interesting addition to their hall of statues.
Do they have a hall of statues?
Well, no. But now that they've got a statue, maybe they'll start.
What are they going to do about the Elder Council?
Meritorius was a good man and the most powerful Grand Mage we had seen in a long time. The other councils in Europe are worried about who will fill the vacuum now that he's gone. The Americans are offering their support. The Japanese are sending delegates to help us wrest back some control, but...
Sounds like a lot of people are panicking.
And they have a right to. Our systems of power, our systems of self-government are delicate. If we topple, others will follow. We need a strong leader.
Why don't you do it?
He laughed. Because I'm not well-liked, and I'm not well-trusted, and I already have a job. I'm a detective, remember?
She gave her own little shrug. Vaguely.
Another snippet of pop music drifted by the window, and Stephanie thought about the world she'd grown up in, and how different it was from the world she'd been introduced to, and yet how similar. There was joy and happiness in both, just as there was heartbreak and horror. There was good and evil and everything in between, and these qualities seemed to be shared equally in the worlds of the magical and the mundane. It was her life now. She couldn't imagine living without either one.
How are you? Skullduggery asked, his voice gentle.
Me? I'm fine.
Really? No nightmares?
Maybe one or two,
she admitted. They'll always be there, reminding us of where we went wrong. If you pay attention to your bad dreams, they can help you.
I'll be sure to keep that in mind next time I'm asleep.
Good, said Skullduggery. In any event, get well soon. We have mysteries to solve and adventures to undertake, and I need my partner and student with me.
Student?
He shrugged. Things are going to get a lot rougher from here on in, and I need someone to fight by my side. There's something about you, Valkyrie. I'm not quite sure what it is. I look at you and...
And you're reminded of yourself when you were my age?
Hmm? No. What I was going to say is there's something about you that is really annoying, and you never do what you're told, and sometimes I question your intelligence. But even so, I'm going to train you. Because I like having someone follow me around like a little puppy. It makes me feel good about myself.
She rolled her eyes.
You are such a moron.
Don't be jealous of my genius.
Can you get over yourself for just a moment?
If only that were possible.
For a guy with no internal organs, you've got quite the ego.
And for a girl who can't stand up without falling over, you're quite the critic.
My leg will be fine.
And my ego will flourish. What a pair we are.
She had to laugh.
Go on, get out. Mum will be up soon to check on me.
Before I go.
Yes?
Aren't you going to show me what you've been practicing? You've been dying to show off from the moment I knocked on this window.
Stephanie looked at him and arched an eyebrow. But he was right, and he knew it. The other good thing about this recuperation period was that she had all the time she wanted to develop her powers, and she hadn't wasted the few days that had passed already. She clicked her fingers, summoning a small flame into the palm of her hand. She watched it flicker and dance, then looked up at Skullduggery and grinned.
Magic, he said.
So, Skullduggery Pleasant, we're so pleased to have managed to get you into the studio and away from your busy and hectic schedule of saving the world.
It's my pleasure.
Very, very pleased to meet you. Now, look, I've got loads of questions here from loads of fans. You've got a big following around the world, and they have been asking questions about you. They're dying to know so much about you. So please tell me, what's it like being a skeleton?
Right, grand. Well, yes, the whole skeleton thing, it really isn't as bad as it sounds, you know. For instance, I never put on weight, for one thing. I never have a bad hair day, for another. It took a little getting used to, I'll admit, but for the first few weeks, like, I kept expecting my jaw to fall off. But I like to think that I've grown into a very well-adjusted skeleton.
Ooh.
I'm happy with who I am, if you know what I mean, so thank you very much.
Yes, well, I mean, you're looking very, very good on it.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, very fit. Now, I mean, one of the other questions that people keep asking about you is, you know, are there any times when your magic's got you into an embarrassing situation at all?
Me? No, no. Oh, but I did witness an amusing event when an evil sorcerer, who shall remain nameless to spare his blushes...
Are you sure you want to make him nameless?
I think I shall, just in case, you know, protecting the innocent and that. Anyway, he tried to evade me by turning invisible in a crowded marketplace. He really should have practiced that skill a little harder, I can tell you, because while his clothes became transparent, he himself did not. So, needless to say, he surrendered himself immediately and asked for something to cover himself up. I gave him my hat, which was a waste of a good hat, if you ask me.
An evil sorcerer's never quite look right without their clothes on.
Very true. They,
yeah, absolutely. You are brilliant at the magic and all the rest of it. People out there are asking, what is your best one? What is the grand finale of magic that you can do, you know?
I see, there's a tough question. You know, how long have you got? Well, you see, I'm an elemental, which means I have some degree of influence over fire, water, air, and earth. But I must admit, I do have another trick or two up my sleeve. But my best one, no, I'm afraid I can't reveal that to you just yet.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, but rest assured, when I do, it will be spectacular. Probably.
Well, if I can't press you on that one, then tell me something about these three names. I mean, I'm sure lots of people out there are quite confused about this.
Yes, the three names. Well, now, you see, names are power, you see. When we're born, we are given a name, right? But that name can be used against us to control us, like. So sorcerers take another name to protect ourselves. But there is a third name, a true name, we call it, the source of all our power, and this name rests in our dreams and should never be spoken to another person. But the name I took, Skullduggery Pleasant, and the reasons I took it, that's a secret.
There's an awful lot of secrets going around in your life.
Well, you know, some things have to remain a secret.
Well, perhaps you could tell all your fans out there what is it that actually made you become a detective. That's not a secret, is it?
No, not at all. For a time, I was a soldier, for lack of a better word. I fought against evil, and I did my best. But when that war was over, I realized there was still a lot of fighting left to be done in the world. Listen, as a wise man once said, you've got to be one of the good guys, because there's way too many of the bad. And I guess being a detective meant that I could help the people of the world to combat the evil in the world.
So if detectiving hadn't appealed to you, what do you think you might have ended up doing with your life?
I'd be a mad old hermit in a cave, battling rock monsters and saving the world from fungus. That's what I'd be doing. I know that for sure.
How far would you actually go to solve a crime?
How far would I go? Exceedingly far, trust me.
Yes, I think we've just discovered that. So, of all the monsters and the weird things that have ever happened to you, who's the freakiest-looking person you've ever met?
Now, you see, freaky is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? I try not to judge anyone by how they look. After all, some people might even consider me to be freaky. Perhaps you do, but I suppose if you were to insist on an actual answer, I'd have to say I once met a gentleman who had his face on the inside. That was just odd.
Really odd.
It was indeed.
So, obviously your fans want to know, what are the things you love, but mostly, what things do you hate?
Well, hate is a very strong word, but I really hate it when people try to kill me. I I think it's just inconsiderate, and it happens more often than you'd think. It can grow quite wearisome.
Okay, then. Well, tell me, Skullduggery, if there was one thing in your life that you could actually change, what would that be?
Now, let me ask you a question. Why would I want to change anything?
Good point.
Am I not perfect the way I am?
Good point.
Thank you. I think so, too.
Okay, now then, the last two questions here now.
Grand, fire away.
Okay. What is your most prized possession?
That would be my car. It's a 1954 Bentley R-Type Continental, and it's beautiful.
And so, Skullduggery. I mean, you know yourself better than anybody else in this world.
I hope so.
Yeah, and how would you describe yourself in 5 words?
5 words. Right. Here goes, in no particular order, least of all alphabetical. Charming. Witty. Lethal. Brilliant. And modest.
Thank you so much for being in the studio with us today.
Thank you very much.
We look forward to your next adventure.
So do I, and I hope I survive.
Yeah.
Very pleasant it will be too.
Yeah.
Audible Kids hopes you have enjoyed this audiobook. For more like it, check out kids.audible.com.